Welcome to the Gleeman's Apprentice, a Wheel of Time podcast. I am your Gleeman, Twitch Avery.
And I am his apprentice, Mandy Cat.
Travel in the wastelands in search of every story. The Gleeman's goes to find tales of bravery and glory. Pass along achievements accomplished by mighty folks. The telling of the wheel made up by different spokes. He comes across a long last singing whose clothes are tattered and worn. Invited her on his journey.
As Mandy Cat has already read the first four books of the series, there are always potential spoilers up through The Shadow Rising.
And after that, I'll be reading the rest of the books for the very first time with my Gleeman, Twitch.
Welcome back to another episode of the Gleeman's Apprentice. How are you doing today, Mandy Cat?
Pretty good. How are you?
I am excellent.
Good.
I am excited for these chapters. They're kind of on the slower end, but we get some good information.
Definitely setup chapters, but very more interesting setup chapters, if I can say that much.
Definitely.
I am impatient, though, to see Loyal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I was thinking about that. I was like, when are we going to get my buddy Loyal back in?
He's been missing for a little bit.
And he's there, right? I mean, he's somewhere in the tower.
Yeah.
I mean, the stone.
Yep. Oh, okay. They mentioned him in the last chapter that we're going to cover. So we are covering chapters 12, 13, and 14 today.
Yes, we are.
Tanchico or the Tower.
Chapter 12.
Chapter 13, which is... Rumors. And 14, Customs of My Inn.
Sounds interesting, Mayen. Doesn't it?
I don't know how to pronounce that.
I say Mayen.
Mayen, perfect, that works.
I'm not from there, so I'm allowed to pronounce it incorrectly.
All right. Yeah, if you want to start us off with your cat notes.
Yeah, absolutely. So chapter 12, it's Egwene is waking up from Teleronriad. Right, this is about where we ended in the last chapter, 11. She'd been meeting Amos and doing some adventuring.
Yes.
And then pulled out. So now it's her waking up from Teleronriad. There's, with her is Elaine, Avi, and Nynaeve, all super worried for her, like, you took so while to wake up, Egwene.
Yeah.
And Egwene just says, I suppose I had reason to stay a little longer than expected. Now, readers, we all know, yeah, you did. But I'm just thinking, like, her worried friends are like, you suppose you had a reason?
Well, and there's this nice little passage, because right now we're in Elaine's head, right?
Yeah.
That Nynaeve replaced the pitcher of water that she was holding back onto the washstand.
And it sloshed out. You could tell she was angry about it.
Yep. She was ready to throw the whole pitcher into Egwene's face if she didn't wake up. And it's funny because we know, as readers, that she was pulled out before she wanted to go because she was receiving useful information and meeting this new dreamwalker and so...
Yeah, so anyway, she... is it Nynaeve is asking, well, what's the reason? And she's just so super anxious and saying, Nynaeve is saying, well, maybe Teleronriad really is more dangerous if it's harder to come back, which is, I feel like that's a realistic worry. Like,
yeah.
Oh my gosh, you didn't come back. Is it getting harder to come back? You know, it sounds like something out of a horror movie, actually. You get addicted to something, then it's harder and harder to come
exactly, back. Yeah. It's definitely a concern.
So legitimate worries on Nynaeve's part, but Egwene reveals, no, I met a wise one named Amys, who said, I need to go meet her at Cold Rock's Hold. And Avienda does confirm, yep, that's a real person, as well as a dreamwalker in Once Upon a Time Far Daris Mai, which is a maiden of the spear, prior to becoming a wise one. And that Egwene has a moment, she puts together why in her initial dream in the way she saw a maiden. Yep. At first, that was the same as Amy's, but she doesn't actually share that detail. I'm like, oh, that's nice and discreet.
Yeah,
like,
but she realizes that Amy's was obviously, like, experiencing, like, memories, right? Like trying, you know, reliving her glory days of being Far Daris Mai.
Avienda also shares Amy's is Ruark's wife, as well as sister wife to Avienda's sister mother, Leanne. So we get some cultural context of sister wives. Now, most people listening probably have watched TLC and know what that one means, but neither of the Two Rivers women have ever seen Sister Wives, a TV show, and they were flabbergasted at the idea of polygamy. And even Elaine seems to have met the end of her courtly knowledge of Aiel folks,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
But then Avienda's left confused, like, hey, but what would you, Elaine and Egwene, what would you two have done had one not been willing to step aside for Randall Thor? And I'm confused also, why does your culture permit men to ask women for marriage? And it just flows into this whole Avienda vehemently insisting she only wants the spear and her spear's sisters, and Egwene is basically soothing her, saying, well, no one will force you to marry.
Yeah.
And we, who have read chapter, or book four, know that's maybe not her concern right now.
But. Yes.
But that was a cute scene. I like that cultural context scene.
Yeah, yeah. And it's I mean, you mentioned sister wives on TLC, and I happen to originally be from Utah and have a lot of polygamy in my ancestry. But the Aiel have a very different practice of polygamy. Like,
yes.
It's
woman focused almost.
Well, yeah, and it's very much like a conscious consent between, you know, consenting adults, right? So anyways, I just had to give a little bit of a pushback on that comparison to the sister wife.
Yeah, I never
TLC.
Watched the TV show. I just
did not
saw the
either.
Commercials.
I did not either. I know enough about polygamy. I didn't need to watch a reality show about it. But anyways, yeah, so that's fun.
Yeah, then subject change, and just going to the fact that Egwene did not find anything regarding Black Aja and Tan Chico. But there's more dialogue about the mighty Amy's, who apparently, Avienda shares, has grown no softer since being a maiden. And I like this comparison, because Egwene is like, does anything make her nervous? And Avienda says, waking to find a lion in her own bed would not make Amy's nervous. So it's like, oh, okay. And then Egwene shares what Amy said about the evil Anton Chico and interpreting that could be the Black Aja. But
yep.
Nynaeve tries to argue her, but Egwene does cut her off, insisting dreams are meant to be interpreted. Nynaeve manages to not perseverate, and I think that was an accurate call for Egwene to be like, no, like, this is
yeah.
my specialty,
yeah,
and I do believe that is a safe interpretation.
Yeah. I might not know everything about Telenoria, but I know more about
yeah.
about it than you do, and don't argue with me, this is...
Yeah, it was a fair...
Like, the whole point of me learning to be a dreamer is so I can interpret my dreams. Like, that's... Yeah.
And as well, like, I have a strong trust in Amy's immediately.
Well,
so
yeah.
To me, I'm like, she's wise. Avienda's already confirmed she's a dreamwalker. So if she's saying there's an evil, it does seem
mm-hmm.
directly related to something dark.
And,
but.
And I love the comparison that you touched on with her waking up with a lion in
yeah.
her bed, not even being nervous. I can totally picture it. I can picture Amos waking up. I actually call her Amos, usually. Waking up with a lion, like, standing over her and just, like, casually reaching back and grabbing her knife. You know what I mean?
Oh, right.
Totally picture
that. Or straight
up
just cuddling it, like, hey,
right.
it's sleep
right.
time, let's spoon. Egwene consesses to agree with Nynaeve that there is much to learn in Telenoria, and that is when she determines, I gotta do it, guys. I gotta go to Amy's for teaching, and... Y'all can keep the Tarangrel ring. We can meet in Telenoria as needed. But then she kind of switches and she gets really nervous. Like, you guys don't think I'm running away from you. Like, I'll stick with you to Tanchico. And Elaine, it just does her courtly reassurance. Nope, you must go.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Well, and Egwene's using the defense that I can learn from Aemys and the other wise ones, and then I can teach you what they've taught me. Because you guys can enter with the stone triangular ring.
Yep.
So it benefits all of us. And Nynaeve, you know, is overprotective and overcautious, you know, rightly so. But Elaine, yeah, very much is like, no, you're right. This is something you need to learn. And we talked about this either last episode or the episode before, where all three of these women are so ambitious and so just thirsty for knowledge and to improve the skills they have. You know what I mean? So yeah. I like this chapter. It's a fun chapter.
I agree. And it almost seems like they're acting more cohesively, too. Like, they're disagreeing, but it becomes very, like, I respect what you're saying.
They're working on it. They're finding middle ground. They're, you know what I mean? They're
So as Egwene asks Avienda to join her to meet Aemys, Moraine enters the room, which interrupts her. And Moraine announces the death of Amico and Joya. Boom! And right, this is still kind of the night after the Trolloc attack.
Yes.
We're still in the same night.
Yes, it's right after the Trolloc attack.
And I appreciate Nynaeve goes immediate detective mode just to determine, so was the entire attack an attempt to free the Black Aja? Like, what's going on? How did they die? And that's where it gets gruesome, but Moraine explains.
Yep, she says... Well, first of all, Nynaeve says, was that the reason for the attack? All that to kill them, or perhaps to kill them if they could not be freed? I've been sure Joya was confident because she expected rescue. She must have been lying after all. I never trusted her repentance. Wow, sorry. Not the main purpose, perhaps, Moraine replied. The captain very wisely kept his men to their posts in the dungeons during the attack. They never saw a single Trolloc or Merdral. But they found the pair dead after, each with her throat rather messily cut, after her tongue had been nailed to her cell door. She might as well have been speaking of having a dress mended. I'm sorry, that's fucking gruesome.
Yeah, I labeled it grotesque.
Yeah.
And Moraine just was like, yes. Their throats were messily cut. She's just being matter-of-fact to answer Nynaeve. I don't think your theory is correct just based on their tongue being nailed on their cell door.
Yeah, and even Elaine is like, I would not have wanted that for them. Not like that. The light illumined their souls. And it's like, fuck their souls. The light, they forsook the light. And that's basically what Egwene says. So yeah, anyways.
It's fun. And it's not an act of agree, man. That's not their MO.
They asked that. Yep.
Moraine surmises the shadow has resources beyond what we know. Well, that's terrifying. But Elaine does some good guesswork. Basically she's thinking, well, do snitches get stitches? And it's not necessarily that they told the truth, actually, so much as punishment that they got caught.
Yeah.
And overall I support her theory. She kind of hints in her mind, Two Rivers folks don't get the great game, you know, the game of houses, but this is what it looks like, is you're punished just for
it's
not being where you should be, so you're dead.
Yep. You make the littlest mistake and you will be punished in the worst possible way.
Yeah, but that's pretty messy. And can you explain what it would look like? Was the tongue on the outside of the cell door? Was it on their own inside?
I'm guessing it was on the inside.
Okay, so something got inside
and
the
cell.
And so,
yeah, so, I mean, they must have had long fucking tongues. Because you
imagine...
Tongues
are long. I think someone pulled it out.
That's as far as I can pull mine out.
Yeah, but you sticking your tongue out is different than a horror monster ripping your tongue out. It goes down your throat bed.
So they pull it out, and then, like, so they've got to, like, get the hammer, like, in between the nose and the tongue to nail the tongue. So that's got to be gruesome as hell. So they're sitting there
suffocating
with their tongue.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
And then with their, I'm guessing, so it would be like their head's up, and the front of their tongue is where they, you know,
okay,
have the nail enters. And then while their neck is, you know, their chin is up like that, they just slit their throats.
I thought they ripped the tongue out first. So that's disgusting. So they nailed their tongue so they were still alive.
The way I read it is okay. Their tongues were nailed to the door.
It's even more gruesome.
While it was still in their mouths. Not like ripped out. Like while it was still
Ramsay
in their mouths.
Ramsay Snow, how did you get to the stone? I don't know. No, that's grotesque. And I did want to go back and give kudos to the guards. Because Moraine even said they wisely held their post in the dungeons. And I'm like, good job. Because she was kind of treating you like children. When she was saying like how many guards per door. And they stayed put even when they heard the trolley.
And good for them for following the orders. Good for the captain to make that choice.
But that being said, now something was... Now, remind me, was the monster that got them inside the cell with them? Or was it just reaching its hand through the cell window?
And we don't get that detail.
Okay. Okay. I wasn't sure.
But...
Because the guards didn't hear anything, so I assumed it was... Something got inside with them.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what you would assume.
Yeah.
Ooh. So...
That's a resource we don't want to meet.
Yeah, well, right? So, I mean, I guess it could possibly be...
Murdral, possibly?
The Murdral... I mean, yeah, they talk about how Murdral can travel through shadows, but they can't go through walls.
Okay.
So, like, my thought might have been, when the first time I read this, or maybe, like, actually kind of still is that a Forsaken, like apparated in the cell
or like got to do that 1-inch slit at the bottom of the cell or
maybe there's a shadow spawn, you know, creature that we haven't met yet can like slither through things and change its shape. I don't know. Yeah. But
my only problem with that theory is always, so why hasn't it killed Rand already? You know, if it's that good, why didn't it just go kill Rand? I think that's a typical.
Well, we know that there were like, the Trollocs and Murdral were not ordered not to kill Rand. They tried. And they almost did. And then other Trollocs saved him, right?
True.
So
anyway, grotesque scene. This is one of those, this could be its own horror movie if you really stuck with that theme. Good job, Robert Jordan.
I love his horror elements. I've said it before.
And per usual, Moraine just changes the topic to their upcoming choice. Are you ladies going to Tanchico or the Tower? And Nynaeve just goes into boss mode and demands a fast boat for herself and Lilaine because they're going to continue to Tanchico. And then she announces Egwene's plans to go to Coldrock's Hold with Avienda. Just throws it out there. Yep. There you go, Moraine.
Yep.
But Avienda gets a little upset and she's kind of making up these excuses. There's other maidens that'll join Egwene. Then Egwene is, she's not disagreeing, but she's genuinely confused because they have this bestie friendship going on. And Avienda, you already know Amy is. But then let's cue the classic Moraine moment that Avienda's not going to Tanchico or Cold Rock's Hold.
She is going neither to Tanchico nor Cold Rock's Hold, Moraine said, taking a letter from her pouch and unfolding the pages. This was placed in my hand an hour gone. The young Aielman who brought it told me it was given to him a month ago. Before any of us reached Tyr. Yet, it is addressed to me by name, at the Stone of Tyr. She glanced at the last sheet. Avienda, do you know Amys of the Nine Valley Sept of the Tardad Isle? Bear of the Hydo Sept of the Shardad Isle? Mulane of the Jirad Sept of the Goshin Isle? And Siana of the Black Cliff Sept of the Nakai Isle? They signed it. They are all wise ones, I said I. All dreamwalkers. Avienda's stance had shifted to wariness, though she did not seem aware of it. She looked ready to fight or flee. And I love that.
Yeah.
I love that she's nervous as fuck. And she, I think that we can glean that she kind of, like, this is something she's been avoiding.
Yep.
Like, she doesn't want to take Egwene to Coldrock's Hold because that means she's going to be in, and we already got... In book 3, when we first met her, Bane and Triad were teasing her about...
Being there? Or
yeah, about maybe running away from something, or, maybe shirking her duties a little bit.
Yeah, so Moraine is just impressed about dreamwalkers. She's like, oh, I've heard of those. And in my head, I'm like, okay, but isn't it the same as your dreamer? Of course you've heard of them, but maybe it is slightly different. We find out the letter had been sent before Avienda even arrived to Tyr, which supports what you just said. Like, Avienda's been running away from something.
Yep.
And it spells out that, she must join Amys at the slopes of Chandar.
Hold on. So, I gotta read this too. Here's what they say about you. What they said perhaps before you had even decided to come to Tyr. There's among the maidens of the spear and the stone of Tyr a willful girl called Avienda of the Nine Valley Sept of the Tardad Ale. She must now come to us. There can be no more waiting or excuses. We will await her on the slopes of Chandar above Ruidian. There's no more about you, but mainly telling me that I must see you come to them without delay. They issue commands like the Amarlin, these wise ones of yours. And she made a vexed sound.
Yeah, Avienda's just resistant and angry.
Yeah.
I'm not going to run like a child when anyone calls my name.
I do not go running like a child!
But this is great. Like, these wise women are wise, because Moraine says, well, I already showed the letter to Ruark.
Yeah.
Which the writer made clear I needed to do before telling you about it.
Yeah.
And that, like, Avienda's irate, and we know, like, Ruark's going to enforce this then. Oh, not just because he's Amy's husband, but because he's Ruark.
Well, I mean, first of all, he's the clan chief of her clan.
Yeah.
He's married to Amys, and he's also married to Avianna's aunt, which also makes him her uncle. So you know that they have a relationship, you know, beyond clan chief and maiden of the spear, you know. Yeah. So, of course, there's no way she's getting away from Ruark.
Yeah, it's fun to see Avienda as bullheaded.
Why would you want to get away from Ruark? He's so hot.
He is hot. But she's being just like a gooey in her bullheadedness. And then, it's interesting though, Avienda keeps insisting, no, I'm Fardar's Mai. Like, she only wants to be maiden of the spear. Yep. Therefore, why she was insisting, I only want my spear and my spear sisters, because this was probably coming. Sounds like you can't be both. If you're a wise one, you're a wise one. You no longer have the spear. And she did say that because, maybe she didn't.
Well, but
I'm going to skip that.
But we know that Amys was Fardar's Mai before she became a wisdom. She's no longer Fardar's Mai, which makes you think that you can't be both.
And Moraine says, Avienda, you could say no to Ruark, but there's no context to that, and it seems like a not healthy option.
Yeah.
I think that's interesting, because it's like, apparently you could try to argue your clan chief, but I'm guessing he'll, like, stab you or something.
Yeah, he wouldn't put up with it. And we've kind of gotten from...
I just think it's interesting, though, because she could say no. So it seems like it's a gap open for you can try to argue your clan chief in a way maybe you can't argue your queen or king.
Well, yeah. Yeah. I mean, they do say the clan chiefs aren't kings.
Correct.
And, but, like, I feel like it's stated pretty clearly. There's no getting around this. She's not going to win an argument with Ruark about this.
But then this whole conversation circles to Moraine telling Egwene, go ahead and join Avienda to Chandar above Ruidian, as clearly Amys will actually be waiting there, not at Coldrack's Hold. So I didn't catch any of the foreshadowing in the first read-through, but it's very obvious now.
Yeah.
There have been hints where Avienda gets closed-mouthed, or, you know, the whole first part of this chapter was very, like, she didn't want to talk about Amys even, so.
Yep.
Moraine tells Elaine and Nynaeve, hey, there's a raker leaving from is it part of the Othlandmere or something? An Othlandmere raker.
Yep.
And it's at the docks in Maul, so one of the docks right there. And you guys are headed up to Tanchico then. Like, she already had it planned, basically.
Yep.
So Nynaeve's not happy. Is the raker the one she kept getting sick on? Or she just gets
sick? No, they haven't been on a raker yet.
Oh, okay. Well, either way, Elaine just kind of asked Moraine, hey, so what's with this war you want? And also, how's Rand doing? And Moraine clarifies, I do not want war so much as I want to keep Rand alive to Tarmann Gaiden. As for Rand's plans, he's revealing them tomorrow. And then it just ends with Elaine fretting about, how is Rand going to feel that I'm truly leaving for Tanchico?
Yeah.
I know, it's a bit of an eye roll, isn't it?
Yeah. But
so that's... So Moraine was pretty much ready for them. I don't know if she knew about Egwene, but it didn't seem surprising to her.
Well, I mean, she's really good at, like, taking on information without showing, you know, without showing any type of reaction.
And like perhaps the Dreamwalker, knowing that Amy's was a Dreamwalker, was enough to seal the deal, because she does want Egwene to be trained.
Yep.
Because she must have had an inkling way back in, was that book one, where she was starting to teach Egwene, had an inkling that Egwene might have dreams, because she was sent her to one of the other Aja for training?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So anyway, I'm just thinking she's pretty good at that stuff. But that's it.
Well, I mean, she's a very smart and wise woman. She's very educated. She's, once again, very ambitious, very goal-oriented, you know.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that she would... She schooled herself to be able to take on shocking information without showing emotion about it. And I don't think that that's an uncommon trait among Aes Sedai.
Yeah, that's true. It's just, I'm feeling, I guess there's this lack of validation. Like, wow, Egwene, that's an amazing feat. This is so incredible. How were you in Tel Arondreod so long? You know, it's more of a, okay, let me explain what's happening to Avienda first.
Yeah.
And now that I've explained all this context, and I also already know about this Amy's person.
Yep.
Go ahead and go, Egwene. But yeah, I feel this was a giant setup chapter, but it was interesting.
Oh yeah, no, it's good information, and I really enjoy once Moraine walks into the room and you find out about the Dark Friend sisters and the way they died. And,
yeah, oh, pretty gruesome.
Another scene that I really hope they figure out a way to keep in. Like, I want to see at least a flash of what that looks like.
Yeah. I agree. That'd be a good one to keep in the TV series. But good stuff. So I'd say if we learned, the biggest thing we learned is just that Avienda is probably set to become a wise one as well.
That would be a good prediction. That makes sense.
Because why are all these wise women demanding her and she's so productive of her spear suddenly?
Yep.
Or not so suddenly, but we can put everything together.
Yep.
So, yeah, good chapter.
Yep. I like that chapter. All right, moving on to chapter 13, Rumors. I also find this chapter quite entertaining as well.
Yeah, this is a map perspective. Starting in an average tavern and tear with its average conglomeration of visitors. Lots of description, but, you know, the barefooted sailors, some fellas wearing necklaces, blah, blah, blah. Matt is drinking his woes, and he's actually thinking through the night of all the fighting. Including he apparently killed a gray man himself, and also he at one point confronted a murderall who said, "Time to die, horn sounder. Well, that's incredible. So maybe this was a targeted attack against Tavirin specifically.
No, maybe. And
especially and knowing that he's the horn sounder.
That's nice to know, because in previous books, when we've gotten like the rare glimpses of him talking to Belzamon, Belzamon wasn't quite sure who he was, right?
Right, and that same murderer was about to kill Matt, and yet another attack of Trollocs against a Fade that saved Matt.
What do they say? A dozen Trollocs come out and just start hacking on the murderer, and the murderer kills over half of them, but eventually they...
And then I'm just trying to think, was Lanfear protecting Matt as well? Because that seems less likely. I think she likes Rand, but...
Well, we do know that she's approached Matt in the tower.
Yeah, when he was sickly. But yeah. Then... Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
Or, I mean, maybe she knows that Rand can't become who he is if his two Taverin buddies are snipped out. I don't know. I don't know. That could be a theory.
That's a good point. But either way, I still think there were dark friends. Like, clearly dark friends were involved.
Oh, yeah. You know,
it makes me think dark social. Like, who else had a command, like, make sure the barge is full of Trollocs?
Well, we know that there was a Terran High... I can't remember if it was a Terran High Lord or High Lady. When we were in the mind, in the perspective of the man who calls himself Bors.
Yeah.
We know that he did note that there was a Terran.
Oh, yeah.
Like a Terran high. I can't, like I said, I can't remember if it was Lord or Lady, but he noticed that there was a Terran there.
Noble.
Okay. So, yeah.
Matt's continuing to sit and just listening to basic conversations in the tavern. Then he hears a Lugarter accented man talking of all the feats of false dragons, including Loghain having Yaldin at war, as well as half of Amadicia and Altara. And then that fella in Saldia. What's his name again? Is it Mazrim Tame. Making the sun stand still until the defeat of Lord Bashir's army. And Matt is just struck. This fella is comparing Rand as a false dragon to the other false dragons, despite the stone falling in Kalendor in Rand's hand.
Yep.
And this, I'm just thinking, oh, I'm sorry, Matt. Humans daily prove they refuse to see truth when they don't want it.
Oh, yeah. No.
Like, wow, welcome to human nature.
Very much so.
Good scene. I don't know what you want to read out of it, but it's intense. He approaches a table with a couple of sailors.
So all of a sudden, Matt hears something from a nearby table, right?
Yeah.
So he walks over, and they all kind of just stop talking and look at him. And he says, I heard you mention the two rivers. And I believe Forkbeard is the one that says,
yeah.
I did, my lord. I was saying there'll be no tobacco out of there this year, I'll wager. I have 20 casks of the finest Two Rivers leaf, though, than which there is none finer. Fetch an excellent price later in the year. If my lord wishes a cask for his own stock, he tugged one point of his yellow beard and laid a finger alongside his nose. I am certain I could manage to. You'll wager that, will you? Matt says softly, cutting him short. Why would there be no tobacco out of the Two Rivers? Why, the White Cloaks, my lord. The Children of the Light. And that's when it's like, boom, boom, boom. What about the fucking Children of the fucking Light? That's not what he says, but
it's how he says.
Bloody White Cloaks.
Yeah, and this is a mishmash of people at the table. So that's the Kandori merchant is the one talking.
Yep.
And there is a Kyrian expat from the Civil War. Basically, he looks like he once was fat and wearing noble clothing, but now it's tattered because he had to leave since that.
Yeah, and he talks about how a lot of Kyrian nobles have come down in their, you know, quite a few notches in the world that they knew.
Yeah, so it's an interesting group, but then it gets even more interesting. So why are White Cloaks there?
The rumor is, my lord, the White Cloaks have gone into the Two Rivers, hunting the Dragon Reborn, it's said. Though, of course, that cannot be, since the Lord Dragon is here and here. These rumors can run very wild, my lord. Perhaps it's only wind in a bucket. The same rumor claims the White Cloaks are after some dark friend with yellow eyes, too. Did you ever hear of a man with yellow eyes, my lord? No more than I. Wind in a bucket.
I'm like jaundice much, but yes, we all know it's Perrin.
And he's like, Matt's like, who else are they hunting, according to this rumor? The Dragon Reborn, a man with the yellow eyes, and who else? And they just he basically says, no one, my lord. No, not that I've heard. Only rumors, straws in the wind.
But I do got some tobacco leaf.
But I do, and I would love to just give it to you right now because you're freaking the fuck out of me.
And all the other folks are getting super nervous around him, but Matt finally leaves, giving this, you know, this is one of the sweet Matt moments, giving them an Andorian coin for them to continue drinking. And as he leaves, he overhears the people saying not to bother the lordling, even though the expat Karyener says, I doubt Matt is a lord either way. And I just thought that was funny how some nobles see right through Matt.
Yeah.
Like, they know.
Yep.
I don't know how they figured it out, but.
Well, and Matt very much does not want to be a noble. He hates nobles.
Probably just him offering a coin is not noble-ish. But yeah, so that's some good information. And this goes back to Egwene's had a lot of dreams about White Cloaks in the Two Rivers.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's concerning. I'm concerned.
Okay.
And she's had dreams of her mother crying.
Yeah. Right?
So going on, Matt naturally runs to Perrin's room first, and Perrin's already packing. Perrin confirms, yep, I heard the news, and I gotta go to the Two Rivers. So Matt asks, well, did you tell Rand? And yes, Perrin did, and all Rand did was start muttering to himself, he said he'd do it. He said he would. I should have believed him. We don't get a context of who he is, but is it Fain? Was that Padan
Fain? Who do
you
think?
Padan Fane.
You think it's Padan Fane?
That's the only I cannot remember. I mean, I actually cannot remember.
Okay, so okay.
But that
okay,
would make the most okay, sense.
I mean, you've read
Fane's
it. So.
Fane's a jerk.
Yeah. So Padan Fane has left him a couple different messages basically saying, if you do not catch up to me and meet me in battle, essentially,
I'll kill you.
I'm going to go after your family.
Yeah.
I'm going to go after your home. I'm going to go after your friends. I'm going to go after everything you knew. And so, yeah, I think it's a safe assumption to assume that what Rand is saying right now when he is referring to he is that he was very much referring to
Fane.
Padan Fane.
We haven't seen him for a hot minute either, have we?
Last time we saw him was it at the beginning of this book?
Was it? Oops.
I can't remember.
Well, I already forgot.
Nope. I think the last time we saw him was
the last book, talking to the White Cloak Guards.
Yeah, Pedro Nile. He was talking to Pedro Nile. That was the last time we saw him.
Okay. Which is concerning, because that is a White Cloak. Okay. Yeah. So, Matt, or Perrin asks Matt, do you want to join me? But then Matt can't even finish the words, I will go. It ends, I will go.
Can't even say go.
And he can't. He cannot finish. He's trying. It's so clear he's being pulled by the Taviran so-called nonsense that he doesn't believe. But Perrin understands in his Eorish way. It is a pretty morose way.
Yeah.
But he himself is pulled by his own Taviran string towards home.
Yeah.
And insists, the White Cloaks know my name and therefore can find my family. And he is not sharing with Matt, also I murdered two White Cloaks, so I do know why they're searching for me.
But he's definitely thinking about it.
Yeah. And they're really searching for the man with yellow eyes because that Dick Dane still blames Perrin for his dad dying.
Because...
But that's not true.
Well, because crazy trial buyer has convinced Dane Bornhall that this evil dark friend with yellow eyes named Perrin Ibarra from the Two Rivers...
Yeah.
Was solely responsible for the slaughter of 2,000 White Cloaks.
In Tomon's head. Yeah. So it's complicated. And then Perrin just clarifies, we've been set on different paths. And Matt doesn't necessarily like that answer, but Matt does ask Perrin, take care of my sisters, and thinking of his sisters Baudouin and Eldrin, who both love to tattle on Matt.
Yeah, but he still likes them. They, you know, they're his sisters.
They are.
He's a protective older brother.
So Matt leaves the room in a mood, but his attitude improves a bit when he sees Berelaine soldiering toward him in a clingy little dress. But she straight up ignores him, much to his disdain, and then he calls her out for not being civil. I bet you want to read this part.
I do. He swept her his best bow, elegant and formal. A good evening to you, my lady. She started to sweep by without a glance, and he straightened angrily. Are you deaf as well as blind, woman? I'm not a carpet to walk over, and I distinctly heard myself speak. If I pinched your bottom, you can slap my face. But until I do, I expect a civil word for a civil word. The first stopped dead, eyeing him in that way women had. She could have sewn him a shirt and told his weight, not to mention when he had his last bath from the look. Then she turned away, murmuring something to herself. All he caught was, too much like me.
And then my first reaction was, so Matt's a slut too? And I'm like, oh yeah.
Yeah, we know this.
Sure. not wrong. Matt continues through the hall grouchily, fiddling with a random coin in his pocket, which when he pulls it out to play with, of course, it's a Tarvalon gold mark.
Yeah.
And then he just starts shouting. Do you want to read what he shouts?
Burn all Aes Sedai! And burn Randall Thor for getting me into this! A black and gold livery servant stopped in mid-stride, staring at him worriedly. The man's silver tray was piled high with rolled bandages and jars of ointment. As soon as he realized Matt had seen him, he gave a jump. So, of course, again, Matt tosses a gold mark onto the man's tray. From the biggest fool in the world, mind you spend it well, on women and wine.
That's funny.
That's funny.
And I do appreciate Matt being like, okay, I scared the shit out of some innocent guy. He doesn't get it. I'm not going to get it. But why don't you go enjoy women and wine? Because I'm stuck in whatever this shithole is.
So, for some reason, Matt has gotten, like, this attitude that whenever he makes a fool of himself, or at least in his mind,
pay people.
he just pays the people that he made a fool out of, even though, like, he doesn't need to. They all think he's noble, and they're all scared shitless of him because he's kind of erratic. Yeah. Right? I mean, he's a little erratic.
Oh, it's funny. So this was another, all I could comment on this entire chapter. I'm like, well, that's a lot of setup. I think important notes are just the murder all knew Matt's a horn sounder. Yes. I think that's very important. We learned White Cloaks indeed are in Two Rivers, looking for both Rand and Perrin.
Yeah.
And Perrin's on his way. And Matt can't. Like, and I think that is important to know. Matt can't go. He's been wanting to escape, and he can't even say for a good reason to go back home. Not that he wants to go home, but just a good reason to get out of the stone. He can't even say, I'll go.
He can't even really make, like, as soon as he starts making plans, his brain gets distracted with something else. And, you know, there's a possibility that Matt, I'm not a psychologist, I'm not a psychiatrist, I haven't done these intense studies, but I do know a little bit about ADHD, and it kind of seems like Matt might have a little ADHD. Would you? I mean, you are studying.
Everyone can have symptoms.
But anyways, he can't even make a plan.
Right. Which is a symptom of ADHD, but we know it's still, to me, it's still clearly
Tiberian. It's severe. It's severe.
He just refuses.
The pattern for some reason is allowing Perrin to go back because they know that is just what he needs to do. That's his Tavernus. And I want to quickly just jump in here real fast and just say, Robert Jordan, like, plot armor for the sake of plot armor in fantasy stories is annoying, right?
Yeah.
But Robert Jordan, right off the bat, created this plot armor that made it less annoying. You know what I mean? Like, he created this Tavern.
Yeah.
And gave it to these three main protagonists. And so whenever they, like, when Matt, like, lunges off the building in Tarvalin with his attacker, you know, and of course he lands on top of his attacker, killing his attacker, and he's okay, that's plot armor. That's Tavern. So it was a brilliant, you know, addition from Robert Jordan to throw that in there so that it, you know, it makes sense. So obviously Perrin needs to, like, his plot armor, his plot drive is that the pattern needs him to go to the Two Rivers to figure shit out. That's the way I read it when I was first going through the series.
Yeah.
You haven't really thought that much about
it? No, to me it was just, okay, he's going to go back and Matt can't.
Yep.
So, yeah, okay. Essentially just, whatever.
Basically what I said with less words.
Yeah. More of a, I'll just go with it, RJ.
All right.
Moving on?
Yeah.
Chapter 14, Customs of Vaine. Perrin is in his room finishing packing after Matt leaves, thinking through, I'm doing what's right. And he's just accepting his circumstances, even though he doesn't like that. And we call that radical acceptance, by the way.
Yeah.
He's getting undressed for sleep when the door opens behind him. Of course, first he notes the smell of a flowery scent that makes him think of climbing flowers on a hot summer night. I like that description.
Yeah.
But, I was just thinking, oh yeah, it's like from Italy. It reminds me of Italy.
Okay.
Anyway, but of course it's the first of my...
Well, he does notice that it's not Fael.
No.
It's not Fael's smell.
Nope. It's Berlaine coming in, and just, I'm going to give a big summary, so if you wanted to read more details, that's cool, but basically telling him her plans to make departure for Maine tomorrow, and Perrin's just like, lady, why are you telling me all this? And she's really surprised he doesn't recognize it's that he's the one who needs to give that message to Rand for her.
Mm.
And I have this moment of like, wait, does she also think Perrin's a servant like everyone else does in this series?
I think it's safe to assume that Berlaine thinks everybody is a servant.
Yeah, that's the safer assumption.
Yeah.
But then she kind of like pauses and she's glancing at his body and really ready to hit on his hard as rocks blacksmith muscles.
Mm-hmm.
But Perrin is still declining to do as she asks and insisting, go use a real servant. And she's shocked that he's refusing. But at the same time, I'm pretty sure she's finding his refusal sexy and says, such striking eyes. Which is concerning. We don't like it when people really notice his eyes, right?
Yeah, he doesn't.
But she's mostly hitting on him. So Perrin then throws on his shirt, again telling her, give your message to a servant. I'm going to bed alone because I'm leaving early. And he actually goes ahead and shares he's headed to the Two Rivers. I'm just thinking, like, not so much information, Perrin. Don't forget about Game of Houses, and we don't know who to trust.
Yep.
And all Berlaine does is merely comment, so you're a blacksmith, huh? Why don't you come do some work in my inn, and, you know, I need some ornamental ironwork for my bedroom.
Yeah.
Like, you're I'm thinking, like, D&M stuff? Is this, like, sexual toys?
It sounds kind of weird. Yeah, I'll give you that.
Of course, cue Fayil to finally enter the room.
Yep.
Here it is. She's mid-sentence asking about rumors she heard in the cities, and then she takes in Berlaine, who totally goes cougar and touches Perrin, like, kind of embraces him, kind of. She's just touching him, though.
Yeah, well, it's weird. I mean, he does say that for an instant he thought she might, she meant to try pulling his head down for a kiss. Ugh. She certainly lifted her face as if for one.
But instead she just whispers, I get what I want.
I always get what I want.
Ew.
And she swept past Fayil and out of the room.
Oddly, Fayil is not freaking out right now, but is just looks at his packed bags and just comments, okay, rumors are true. Fayil does her usual protectiveness and insists, it's just a rumor. Also, you can't go. How are you going to avoid Moraine? And it's too long to get there anyway by the time you get there. And Perrin just says, Moraine won't stop what she doesn't know. It doesn't take weeks to go through the ways. And at that moment, Fayil scoffs and reminds him, no, the ways are decayed and people who enter leave crazy. Yeah. So she's not wrong.
Yeah.
But he then clarifies, actually, I've been through them before and survived. And also Loyal is able to read the guidepost to get me there.
Yep.
So then Fayil changes her decisions and is again insisting, well, then I'm coming along. It's another adventure that I've always been wanting to seek. And he's really refusing her to join. Even she makes a suggestion like, no, I can help train Two Rivers folk to fight White Cloak. She's really trying to like pull strings here of how she can help.
Yeah.
But then she snaps and gets angry about that hussy Berlaine, if that's who Perrin expects to join him. But Perrin turns into some dick talk to get her away, saying, yeah, Berlaine would sure feel great in my arms. Maybe I'll just end up in Mayenne after all.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, he's, okay, he's frustrated at, like, the fact that she went there, right?
Yeah.
But rather than doing the rational thing and, you know, communicating, no, that is not what I want. She came in here forcibly. I spent the whole 10 minutes asking her to leave. And then when you came in, she just...
became a cougar.
Yeah, I'm not attracted to her. I'm attracted to you. Instead of saying that, which would probably be fairly healthy... he just starts talking about, like, yeah, I could see her sitting in my lap. Like, fuck, Perrin! What the fuck, dude? Like, I thought you thought through your decisions. I thought you thought about what you were going to say. Anyways.
Fayil takes the cue, and she storms out. He sulks by the door a while, which still has its chipped remainders from the machete that he had to save her from 2 nights ago. Unable to share the specifics that he murdered White Cloaks and also wanting her to be as far away from White Cloaks and Taviren and Bubbles of Evil.
Yep.
And also wanting to howl with grief. Nice touch the wolfy nature.
Well, I mean, he doesn't, like... his plan is... stupid as hell, but his plan is to go to the White Cloaks and the Two Rivers and give himself up. And allow them to try and hang him. Like, try him and then hang him.
Yeah.
Like, that's his plan. That's his end goal. And he doesn't see any way around that. And he doesn't want her to get involved, possibly getting hurt by the White Cloaks, you know, trying to save him. Or, you know, he doesn't... I guess I can kind of understand that aspect. But if he would just share that with her,
right,
they could have a conversation.
Oh yeah, this is one of those you're frustrated, just share. Open up about it. Just tell what's really going on, Perrin, but Perrin doesn't like to.
Nope. Okay.
So, perspective actually changes to Fael after she storms out. Stewing about that milk-faced vixen. So, Berlane. Fael catches up to Berlane and announces, Perrin Ibarra belongs to me! And she totally begins a fight. This is just Fael picking a fight with a wiser, mature woman.
I mean, okay.
You might want to, you can choose a different word than wise, but I think, I think Berlane has plenty of thought. I think I could call it wise. She knows how to manipulate in ways that I'm not sure Fael has learned. Because here's what goes on.
I actually kind of compare Fael to, Cersei Lannister in just the sense of she's very skilled at manipulating the game of houses.
Fael or Berlane?
Berlane. Did I say Fael?
Yeah.
I meant Berlane.
I would agree with that.
So, yes. So that's what I was saying.
Skilled in a less, it's not overt, right?
Like her ambition is to keep Meereen out of the clutches of Tyr, whereas Cersei Lannister's ambition was to rule the fucking world.
It's a little different.
It's different. And the motivation is much more pure.
What I meant is I found Cersei to actually be, she wasn't overt all the time. People knew what was going on, but she still hid under other people.
No, she very much did. She was good. And I guess you could say that she was wise. Although I like to think of wisdom as like a trait for good people, not bad people, but not saying the Berlane is necessarily bad, anyways, go ahead.
Maybe there's healthy wisdom and less healthy wisdom.
Okay. Fael
is taking, without knowing it, Avienda's advice about female competition. She's ready to take her out.
Oh, yeah.
Berlane is catty back, mocking Fael, calling her a servant girl, or are you actually a farmer's daughter? And then Fael is so angry. And in her head, she's going through all these things about Saldia and how she can recite poetry while hawking, and she can hunt and play cistern and also discuss counterattacks to Trolloc raids. So we're getting a little bit of context of Fael's upbringing, a small bit. So Fael threatens to shave Berlane's head and pulls out a knife. However, this is where it turns out Myeners are also taught in combat due to the commonality of Tyran assassins.
Yeah.
And Berlane catches Fael's wrist that has the knife, going on about culturing Perrin, and under Ogier's oath, she'll keep him as a pet as long as she desires. It's intense.
A custom of Meereen. The Terrans do like to use assassins, and the guards cannot always be close at hand. I despise being attacked, farm girl, so this is what I will do. I will take the blacksmith away from you and keep him as a pet for as long as he amuses me. Ogier's oath on it, farm girl. He is quite ravishing, really, those shoulders, those arms, not to mention those eyes of his. And if he is a bit uncultured, I can have that remedied. My courtiers can teach him how to dress and rid him of that awful beard. Wherever he goes, I will find him and make him mine. You can have him when I am finished. If he still wants you, of course.
Oof. Girl fight.
Fael managed to draw a breath. She pulled a second knife. I will drag you to him after I cut off those clothes you are almost wearing and make you tell him you are nothing but a sow. And the worst part of it, Light helped me. I am behaving like a farm girl and talking like one. And the worst part of it was that she meant everything she said. And that is when...
Enter scene, Ruark.
Zaddy.
Full dad mood. Ruark interrupts the fight, shames both of them that they are the last two he expected to be fighting, especially after all the havoc from the Trollocs. He sends Berlane directly to bed without dinner, threatening to have a repeat of their first talk. Neither Fael or I know what their first talk is about. Should I know his first talk? Okay.
Oh, no, but we can think about something, if you wish. She had mentioned when she very first, like at the very end of The Dragon Reborn, she comes in that last chapter.
Wanting dinner with Rand.
And she says, and in a couple nights, I will dine with you, to Ruark. So we can assume that there was a conversation after that point between her and Rourke.
But we didn't actually see it.
No.
Okay.
It happened off screen.
And Rourke isn't going to tell Fael what happened. He does share, though.
So he takes her knives.
Yeah. Yeah, but before that, he's sharing, I've been breaking apart fights between Terrans and punishing them with carting refuse, which is funny. He's been going dad mode all night.
Oh, yeah.
And yes, yeah, you're right. So it was before that. His punishment for Fael was keeping her prized, balanced knife. And he's just like, you have more. I'm just picturing full dad.
Yeah.
Just keeping his cool this whole time. He's disappointed, but he hasn't raised his voice once. He's just talking to them.
Yeah, no, he takes her knives and she's like, those are mine. And he's like, forfeit. Verilane's punishment for fighting was to have you see her sent to bed like a willful child. Yours is to lose these knives you prize. I know you have others. If you argue, I might take those too. I will not have the peace broken.
Yeah, that was a fun moment. Oh, Rourke.
Fael
thinks through Berlane's words, Ogier's oath, and we learn as readers, Ogier never break an oath. So Berlane really is trying to say, I will not break this oath of keeping Perrin as a pet. But Fael just laughs. That silly peahen can try to take Perrin.
Yeah.
That's the end of the chapter, and my first thought is, oh my gosh, Berlane must be the hawk from the dreams that's taming Perrin. Because there's a falcon, Fael, and we don't really know who the hawk is. So now it seems like it's Berlane. She's creepy with Perrin.
Yeah.
I've already called her creepy with Rand, but yeah. It was worse with Perrin.
Yeah.
Because she knew he was uncomfortable. Anyway, she's a twat.
I am going to do something we've never done before, and I'm going to give you a glossary definition.
Oh.
Of Mayen. And it's pronounced May-N.
Okay.
City-state on the Sea of Storms, hemmed in and historically oppressed by Tyr, derives its wealth and independence from knowledge of where to find the oilfish shoals, which rival in economic importance the olive groves in Tyr, Ilion, and Terabon. Oilfish and olives provide nearly all lamp oil. The ruler of Mayen is styled the First. Firsts claim to be the descendants of Archer Hawkwing. The banner of Mayen is a golden hawk.
Yeah, I think we got the banner.
In flight on a field of blue.
And I've been meaning to look back to see what their banner is. I think we got it.
So.
But this is the first time I'm like, I think we found his.
So I think making the statement that Berlane might be the hawk, I think that's
an understatement, because she is the hawk.
I think that's a pretty good prediction. I will go ahead and let you have that one.
All right. Fuck, marry, kill.
And I know what my fuck, marry, kills are. I was worried they were going to be the same as yours, and they're not. So
good. Do you want me to go first?
Yes, you go first.
I'm giving the fuck to Perrin. He's a pretty decent guy. I just liked how he refused Berlane. And he did it calmly at first, and then, you know, was really just, when I say refuse, like, she wanted him to be her little servant, and he just refused, and just, like, explained to her, no, find a servant, I'm not doing this for you. He didn't get him married just because he ended up being really dickish to Fael, instead of just opening up and communicating, so naturally marriage goes to Rourke.
Yeah.
He's just, what a good dad. What a good guy. And even though we didn't directly see him in the second chapter, we know he's the reason Avienda's actually going to probably follow through with letter.
Yeah.
He's stable. He is the land of the Aiel.
He very much is the land of the Aiel. I 100% support that decision.
Kill is an obvious. Berlane, what a hoe. She needs to quit being such a twat. You know, like, I'm... Take no as an answer.
She can't.
She chooses not to.
So in her position, dealing with Terran asshole high noble lord fuck twat fuckers, she like has to be willful.
Don't stand up for her. Okay, that's my kill.
Okay. It's funny. I actually two of the people that you use in your fuck, marry, kills, I am also using, but in different areas.
Okay.
So my fuck is Zaddy Ruark. Because he's just fucking hot.
Yeah,
I,
he was. It was sexy.
I would totally be okay by with being dominated by him. My Mary is actually Fael.
Oh.
I think she dealt with Perrin's ignorance as best as she could. And then she
did what she had to do.
She fought for what she wanted and I don't know. I really liked Fael in this chapter. I really enjoyed her reactions, her thoughts, her, you know, I this is one of my favorite Fael POVs that we've gotten so far. And my kill is Perrin.
Because he was a dick.
Because he's a fucking dick. Open your mouth, communicate correctly with the woman that has a crush on you. I mean, the woman that's in love with you. I mean, come on. Like, they're in love with each other, right?
Right.
And he doesn't know how to deal with it, but fucking communicate with her. Don't just assume you know what's best for her. So yeah, I'm killing Perrin.
Fair enough.
I think it's funny that we both chose characters out of the third chapter that we...
And I knew I did that, but I looked back and I was like, these ones, I don't know what it was. People were just had a stronger presence.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, no. That last chapter that we covered was, I think, the most emotional. And I think why it was natural. Because really, there's only four characters in that chapter and both of us chose three of them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and the other ones weren't quite as emotionally charged unless you wanted to, like, kill a sailor that Matt talked to. But they weren't being evil. They were just telling rumors.
Matt could have been a fuck.
Yeah.
I couldn't do Matt. Elaine could have been a Mary. Like, those were two considerations for me. Matt could have been my fuck and Elaine could have been my Mary. But, no, that last chapter that we covered was definitely the funnest of the three.
It was a fun chapter. And again,
the most, like, emotional driven.
And it was all set up, right?
It's all set up.
If Berlaine's the hawk, when is that going to come out? You know, that's a set up. There's so much. That was good.
So next week, we are covering chapters 15 and 16.
Okay.
Which are... another one of my... probably top five chapter for me, Into the Doorway. And then Leave Takings. Oh. And we are actually going to have a guest on.
Oh, right.
Yeah. We're having a guest from many of the Discord servers that I'm a part of. His name is Skeeterish. And he is an extremely intelligent person who knows this series very well. So...
That'll be fun.
Really excited to have him on. And until then,
everyone be excellent to each other.
And party on, dudes. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Glee Man's Apprentice.
The Glee Man's Apprentice is available on Spotify, Pocket Cast, Google Podcast, Breaker, and Radio Public.
Our theme song is written by Twitch Avery and performed by Andrel, Bard of Time.